Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Calderon Show. We're so glad that you could join us this Sunday afternoon, February 18th, 2018. And we want to welcome all of our listeners, those that are here locally based with us in South Florida, as well as those that are in other states, other countries, and across the pond. We really appreciate you tuning in with us. We're looking forward to another great show. And, you know, this has been, well, this is our first show since the new year. So the new season has started for us, and we are all geared up. And I do want to give a quick shout out to Aaron and Olivia, who are up in Massachusetts. Thank you so much for listening, and looking forward to working with you guys. And you know, before we get into the heavy discussions of the day, I do want to talk about a missing person that has been the alert has been out since February 10th, 2018. For Roberto Angel Perez, and I'm also going to bring on his daughter, Patricia, who's going to join us now. Patricia, how are you today?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and thank you so much for taking a moment away. I know that you and your family and friends are currently involved in a search for your dad. And I believe you're currently in the Pembroke Pines area. Is that correct?
Yes, we met in the Pembroke Pines area, and we had a group of about, I would say, maybe 50 people. So we split up into various surrounding cities. My group was actually sent to North Hialeah, and that's where we are now. I just jumped into a car to have this chat with you.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. And I promise we won't take too much of your time.
I know
that your dad has been missing since February 10th, and he had relocated from Hialeah to Century Village in Pembroke Pines. Is that correct?
That's right. We lived as a family. We lived in Hialeah for 25 years, about a year and a half ago, we moved my parents up to Century Village. Just kind of downsizing, you know, be more comfortable for them. And they've been there since July of 2016. But on Friday night, my parents went to bed around 9 p.m. And my mom woke up a few minutes before 6 a.m. and my dad was gone. And I mean, it did not take long. It didn't take any more than 10, 15 minutes after her call for us to be there. And the police were there by the time we got there as well. And we've been searching for him ever since.
Okay. Now, I understand that there have been sightings of him. Is that correct?
Yes, there have been many sightings in various cities, you know, in and around Pines, in Miramar, in Davie, in Hialeah, in Miami Springs. None that we can confirm, because either the person did not keep, you know, lost sight of him, and we can't confirm whether it was him or not. Or others that we've thankfully been able to find video surveillance of either the business or the church or the place that he was or near there, and we have been able to, rule that person out because it was not him. But, all I ask is that if you do see him, it's very, very important that this person is asked their name, because I get sent dozens of pictures of old men in my phone all the time, all day long, and, you know, they're not my father. And it's as simple as
right.
Walking up to the man and asking him, are you Roberto Perez? You know, do you need help?
Right. Yeah, and I know I've seen multiple photos circulating throughout social media, with people, you know, people getting excited because they thought that it was your dad. And
right.
I guess the silver lining in that cloud is that people are really out there looking, and
absolutely,
and they're really taking it personal, and they're really taking it to heart. Let's go over a quick description of your dad.
Yes, of course. My dad is 82. He's about 5'9". I would say somewhere around 160 pounds. He's, you know, pretty thin to medium build. He has blue eyes, and he has he's you know of a white complexion. He has a hernia in his belly that is very, very easy to see. It's pretty large, and it sticks out pretty far out. We noticed that my dad is only wearing the bottom half of his dentures, so he will not have teeth on the top. And his hair is obviously white because of his age, and it's he only has a little bit of hair around the sides of his head, no hair on the top. He was last seen wearing, you know, a blue checkered shirt and khaki pants, and he was wearing black and red sandals. That's the clothes we know that he left the house in. But it's been, you know, this is the ninth day. It's possible that he maybe made a friend with a homeless person and changed his clothes. You know, it gets chilly at night. Maybe he found a jacket to wear. So we can't just rely on the last clothing that he was seen wearing. We have to, you know, confront these people and ask them if they are Roberto Perez, in fact, and then call the authorities immediately. And I do want to thank, I mean, the way that the community has just come together, you know, through the Facebook posts and family and friends. I mean, I've had people that I never thought I would meet or talk to, or even people from my past, you know, that have come up and have, you know, gathered together in some kind of support and help. And it really means the world to us.
Wonderful. Yeah. You know, that's the power of social media. We've seen, I've seen it shared amongst many of my friends. I mean, that's how I first became aware of it. And, you know, it's been amazing how much it's been disseminated, you know, throughout the South Florida community. So we're asking anyone, if you come in contact with Roberto Angel Perez, call the Pembroke Pines Police Department at 954-431-2200. Again, that's 954-431-2200. If you don't remember the number, call 911. At this point, he probably needs medical attention because he has not taken his medication. He does suffer from dementia. So please, if you think you see him, don't take your eyes off of him. Try to engage and definitely call authorities immediately so that we can get him back home and get him the help that he needs. Patricia, I don't want to keep you too much because I know you're out there pounding the pavement. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
No, that's all. Just that my father's a really, really sweet old man, and we would love to have him home, and we thank you all for your help.
Absolutely. Our thoughts and prayers are with you, and, you know, please keep us posted, and certainly anything that I can do personally, please let me know.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you. We're going to let you go now because I know you need to get back to it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So there you have it. That was Patricia Perez. And again, her dad, Roberto Angel Perez, has been missing since February 10th. So please, if you see him, please call authorities at the Pembroke Pines Police Department, 954-431-2200. Okay, so we have had quite a bit going on this past week. Of course, we had a terrible, terrible mass shooting that occurred at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School here in Parkland, which is located in the northern end of Broward County. And we're going to be talking about that as well. We also have Danielle Morgan, who's connecting with us from London. And Danielle is a friend of ours, and we have played her music quite a bit on this show. And, you know, she's actually been interviewed on the show as well. So we're going to be bringing her on as well. We're going to be playing at least one of her songs. We'll probably play two today. But, you know, so much that's gone on. And, again, our thoughts and prayers are with all of those that have been affected by the shooting in Parkland. Let's pick up this call. Hi there, you're on the Michael Calderon Show. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hello. How you doing? My name's Ron.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I really have a question for our buddy. What's his name? Oh, what did he do his name? Papa? Big Papa.
I'm sorry?
For Papa? Is he going to be in today?
Doug Papa, yes, we are expecting him on the show.
Okay. Yeah, I really have a question for him.
Okay.
So should I call back, or can I give you the question?
You can give us the question. You can stay on hold, and once he's connected with us.
Yeah, I'll stay on the line, and I'll continue listening. But just in case we can't reconnect, you can follow through with the question. I'd appreciate it.
Okay, sure.
Okay, the question is this. Is he aware that the trams in Vegas, both trams, were moving during the gunfire, during the attack?
Okay.
And that they both arrived at Mandalay tram station during the gunfire.
Oh, okay.
And no one has mentioned it. The media, social media, mainstream media, no one has. It's like a taboo subject. No one.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, I've kept on top of that as much as I can, the whole story with the Las Vegas shooting, and
yes.
I've read all of Doug Papa's work, and I don't recall seeing any mention of the trams.
Right. It's really bothered me, because there's three videos, two on YouTube, and the famous video from Corey Langdon, the taxi driver. They all show the trams coming into Mandalay Bay.
Okay.
So there's ample proof. It's not a conspiracy theory. There's ample proof that that they show the trams arriving.
And that's
during the actual
gunfire.
Yes, during the attack. And what's really disturbing, you know, when everyone hears that quieter gunfire, the gunfire where the taxi driver mentions that, oh, that seems like it's coming from somewhere else further away.
Right.
Do you remember that? Did you ever view the
taxi
driver?
I do remember hearing something and reading something about that. And I don't know if it was in one of Doug's articles, but I do remember that.
Yeah. Well, hear this. Okay, hear this. Make it nice and clear for you. That quieter gunfire of about 24 to 28 shots, when I hear the taxi video, I hear it being indoor gunfire, and I also hear it being shot just after both trams arrived, seconds afterwards, right around 14, 15 seconds. This is when you hear the quieter indoor gunfire. And there's three bursts of gunfire. It's not a continuous. It's kind of like, I hate to say it, but it sounds like people are being mowed down with three bursts of gunfire.
Hmm.
Yeah, a very taboo subject, because everyone just stays away from it.
Right. And are you located out there in Vegas?
Oh no, I'm a California guy. But
okay.
Very interested. I'm in Northern California, in the case, primarily because of the taxi video.
Okay. And that can be found where, on YouTube?
The best place to find it is on Facebook, and her name is Corey Langdon. Corilangdon, Langdon.
Okay.
And it's on her Facebook page. She loaded it up there. Best copy. Everyone else is. Other people loaded it up, but it's very fuzzy, grainy, and it's hard to see it. You know, it's poor quality. But hers is a good quality.
Okay.
It's very disturbing.
Well, I'm gonna have to check that out for sure.
There's so much more, but I don't want to say too much. There's so much more that's in that video, the taxi video, that's very disturbing.
Okay.
It's being covered up.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on that?
Hold
on 1 second. Let me see if this is Doug that's connecting with us. All right, just give me a second, Ron. Hi, you're
Hello.
On the Michael
Mike?
Calderon Show. Yeah, hi, how are
Mike.
You, Doug?
I couldn't connect the other way. I had to call in the number direct. I got you good. Go ahead.
Okay. I have Ron, who joined us a couple of minutes ago, and talking about the taxi video.
Mm-hmm.
Let me bring Ron on, and he can kind of recap for you.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, just give me a second here. Okay, Ron, you're on, and we got Doug on.
Very good. Hi, Doug.
How you doing, Ron? How you doing today?
Good, good. My question was, were you aware that the trams, both of them, were moving and arrived at Mandalay during the attack, during the shooting?
Yes, I heard that early on. It's within a couple of days after. I believe, and I don't know this 100%, that at some point in that 1 hour period, I believe they were stopped. The reason why, from the way I understand the tram works, is the tram is run by computer. It's run automatic. And I guess there was a delay because for them to stop it in mid-track in between stations, and people would have been stranded in between stops. There was a delay that night, and I do not know. I heard that at some point it was stopped before it went to Mandalay Bay during this, 1 hour period and stuff in between when he was firing. Now, on the same note, also what was a delay was the helicopter, the private helicopter services, who most of them have their hangars directly across from Mandalay Bay on the Caron Airport property. There also was some delay in Metro or the communication center notifying the helicopters, Maverick and all those private helicopter services that fly back and forth day and night, that the shooting was going on. So when Paddock was firing out that window, helicopters were still landing and circling because they didn't know right away that there was an actual firing coming out of the Mandalay Bay. But going back to the tram on your question, yeah, I heard that within a couple of days after. And like I said, those trams are operated by computer. They stop at the stations. It's all computer generated. And I understand at some point they had stopped them going to Mandalay Bay, but I do not know if that's correct or when that happened.
But let me share this with you. The taxi video is one. The Jason Hartman video, the 43rd floor, is another, and the Raymond Page video is another. The taxi video, the best copy is on Facebook. The other two would be YouTube. They all show both trams arriving into Mandalay Bay at 10:09. Both of those trams are locked in to the tram station. This is when you hear a pause in the machine gun fire. For 1 minute and 5 seconds, there's no more machine gun fire. A long pause. But there is gunfire. It's the quieter indoor gunfire. There's about 24 to 28 shots, three bursts. As far as I can tell from the taxi video, this is where all of this is coming from. It's three bursts of gunfire just after the trams arrived, probably 15 seconds. It doesn't sound good. It doesn't look good. It doesn't smell good. In my mind, from what I see and from what I see in that video, people were massacred in the tram station, and this is being covered up. Very disturbing.
And, Doug, did you have an opportunity to see that video that Ron is referencing?
I did, and I don't, nothing against Ron, but this is a conspiracy theory that's been out there for 4 months. There was nobody shot in the tram station. There were no bodies there, okay? My sources, when I wrote these 45 stories, a lot of them are coming from police officers from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. And believe me, a lot of the police officers are not happy at the way statements were made by the sheriff week after week after week about what was going on. So I can tell you from what I heard, there was no massacre on the tramp stations. That is a conspiracy theory. Go ahead.
Your source is the police department officers.
My sources are both retired and current police officers who've spoken to me for 4 months, and they still have some of the inside scoop that's going on, because all cops talk, whether you're retired or not. And
right.
I can tell you this, on my belief, that did not happen. There were no bodies at the tramp stations. There was not another shooter. I'm telling you this,
but yourself, like me, neither one of us was there.
Neither one of us was there. Right. That's absolutely correct. But I live in Las Vegas, and my sources for these stories, like I said, some were police officers. And based on my experience, is 40 years doing investigations, 20 years in the casino business, and also being a police officer before that, I'm convinced right now that Stephen Paddock was the lone shooter who fired from 32-134 and 32-135. Now, let's get back to these videos. There's a lot of videos that have been out there, and they're out there for months, okay, taken by people's cell phones, people sitting in cars, people on the outside. You got to remember something. You cannot take what you hear exactly on those cell phone recordings and those private recordings, because there's all types of, the best way I could put it, electronic anomalies that occur through delays on cell phone with sounds like an echo is not actually an echo. So you can't take as gospel as what you hear. People are moving when they have those cell phones. Their arms are going up and down. They're laying on the ground.
How about what you
see? So, I've seen nothing. I've seen absolutely nothing that convinces me. And I'm not saying, this is just my opinion, Ron. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying after doing 45 stories, I wrote 45 stories on this for the Baltimore Post-Examiner. And believe me, okay, if I can get into a conspiracy and prove it, I will, but I can't, okay? The only conspiracy that I believe is a conspiracy of incompetence from members of the police department in the high rank in the command. That's Sheriff Joe Lombardo and his undersheriff and some other people who made statements right from the start that just didn't jive with the radio traffic that was going on at night. Because
sure.
I listened to this thing live that was going on.
Sure.
I'm telling you, I listened to it live on the police radio as it was occurring. That's what prompted me immediately the next day to start writing stories, because I knew what they were saying at the press conferences
sure.
wasn't jiving what was on the police radio traffic. And the reason why I say
for
this
instance,
is very simple.
Yeah, for instance, the hour and 10 minutes or so to reach the room.
That the hour and 10 minutes is very disturbing, okay?
Sure.
And
yeah.
the reason why I believe that happened is initially, right from the start, we were told by Sheriff Joe Lombardo, who runs the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, and his undersheriff, Kevin McMahill, that the full SWAT team, that's what these guys in the stairwell were waiting for, that they couldn't take any action until the full SWAT team arrived. Well, we know that the full SWAT team never arrived. How do we know that? Because, like I said, the radio traffic that night, when you listen to it, all the tactical communications, and I wrote a whole story on this, were broadcasted over public airwaves, over the police radio, for everybody in the world to hear. And people, when I say that, people say, why you say for the whole world to hear? If people didn't have a scanner here in Las Vegas, no, it didn't work like that. There's several internet sites. One of them is called Broadcastify. And what they did that night, live from anywhere in the world, if you had access to the internet, you could listen to the entire communications of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, including the officers' movements inside the Mandalay Bay, inside the stairwell when they breached the door. That's where that recording came from when he said, we have to pop this door. And all the other traffic that was going on calls for active shooters that were coming in even after the shooting stopped at other casinos. And that was a tactical mistake, because they could have gotten a lot of citizens and a lot of police officers killed, because those tactical communications were broadcasted,
I read that.
Unencrypted. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, I read that. I read your article about that. It makes absolute full, good sense. But my question is back to the trams. The protocol, I would think, there is somebody inside the control room that controls the trams. There's a person there that views all the monitors and stops the stop the transit. There's an emergency. Send them on their way. Whatever. There's a human being in there operating. Those trams, according to the taxi video, you see them both arriving. Right after they arrive, 15 seconds later, you hear this quieter indoor gunfire. You got your belief? Listen, I'm telling you, I believe people got massacred in the tram, and you're being kept out of the loop. You don't know what's going on, and they're not telling you. This is taboo. No one's talking about it. Even if they weren't shot in there, listen to this. They were in the line of fire. They were coming into the Mandalay building right about 5 minutes, 6 minutes after the shooting began. They were in the line of fire. They could have been shot at, a moving target, if Paddock was shooting from up there, which I don't believe at all. I'm in totally disagreement with you. I don't believe nothing happened up there. I think it's all a staged event. Okay, you might call me a conspiracy theorist, but listen, I'm going by that taxi video 100%. What I see going on there, it was a terrorist attack. There's dead people on the ground, and somebody.
And Ron, let me just throw something in here. You know, I appreciate your perspective and your opinion on it. None of us, you know, were actually there and
right.
are aware of every single event that took place.
I'm going by videos.
Yeah.
Not what people are saying.
No. I'm just validating what you're saying. I'm just saying, hey,
sure.
you know, you,
sure.
you bring a different perspective, and
sure.
you know, who's to say that there isn't some accuracy to that, you know? So I just want to, you know, I appreciate you having a different perspective.
I have a different perspective. I have the taxi video. There's actual proof of shooters shooting out of the tram building. And you say, like,
there's
oh,
not. That's, that is,
about?
Ron, I'm going to tell you right now, Ron, that is not true. That is absolutely false.
It's not false,
Bob.
Because the taxi video, the proof is there. The FBI have it. Las Vegas Police Department have it. They know it's there. There's a chunk of the wall that was shot out at the entrance of the tram building. The taxi video has it. Anybody who's into photography, they could find it there. The proof is there. They can't remove it. It's there forever. Okay? If you care to really know the truth, pull out that taxi video, get your photo guy on it. He'll find it. Just as she was passing, she was leaving. The taxi driver was leaving Mandalay Bay. The last gunfire was going off, the last machine gun fire. As she passed under the track, her camera rolling, she got a muzzle flash and also a picture of the wall that was blown away from the attacker that was in there as he was spraying the people across the street from the tram tunnel, right from the observation room. That is in there. It's proof. Anybody who cares to look, get in there, find it. It's there.
Right. Okay. Well, look, here's what I'm going to do, Ron, because I don't want to keep talking about a video that I haven't reviewed. So I need to review that video. No.
A lot of people haven't.
I haven't. So I'm glad you brought that to light, because I'm going to take a look at that video. And, you know,
well, Michael,
if need
be.
Michael,
let me caution you. You cannot watch the video casually, okay?
Okay.
You have to analyze it very carefully, and I mean frame by frame. I don't mean just watching it, okay? Otherwise, you won't see anything. You have to analyze
okay.
it. This is what I do
I
for
gotcha.
A living, okay? I analyze
okay.
things. Yeah, I diagnose
I gotcha.
So I find these things. Yeah, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this question, and
sure.
It's not just to you, Ron, but because you're on with us, I want to ask you both this question, and also I'm going to bring on Michael Somburg, who's also retired law enforcement over 35 years.
Sure.
And the question is, and Mike, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
I'm fine, Michael. How are you?
All right. So the question is, does a citizen, an ordinary citizen, need an assault weapon? That's the question. Does an ordinary citizen need an AK-47, an AR-15, an M-16? Does an ordinary citizen need access to that type of weapon?
Absolutely not. Under no circumstances does an average citizen like you or me need an assault rifle that is specifically designed for military use on a battlefield. Period.
Right. So,
end of story.
Right. And here in Broward, you know, just this past Wednesday, Valentine's Day, we saw one of the worst school shootings. And it's horrible. And one of the things that that we need to work on, you know, is changing legislation, because there's been a lot of things that have fallen through the cracks, including, and I have here the statement from the FBI regarding Nicholas Cruz and everything that happened with that tip. And the other thing is, I'm going to bring on in a moment, and Ron, I had to mute your line. You can still hear us, but we were getting some feedback from your line. I'm going to bring on Frederick Peterson, who's a military veteran, and there's a story in this whole situation that happened here in Broward. And Doug, I don't know how familiar you are. I'm sure you're pretty familiar on the situation that's occurred here with the mass shooting at the school. But there's a story about another unsung hero throughout this, and I'm going to bring on Frederick Peterson. Fred, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for joining us.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you? Good. Thank you. Thank you.
So tell
us about the young man that you had sent me a message about.
Yes, I was surprised to have found out. Literally an unsung hero. A young man, JROTC cadet, 15 years old, by the name of Peter Wang, had held open a door allowing other students to escape and remained literally at his post until shot. I was shocked to hear, because we've all heard the tale of the football coach who did his
Correct.
Best to shield the students at the cost of his life. And several of us veterans hearing the story have begun contacting Congressman Brian Mast, Congressman Ted Deutsch, to see if being a cadet and sacrificing while in uniform, if there's a method or means by which he could be recognized and given an appropriate decoration for his valor and possibly even considered. I don't know what branch he was within the JROTC, whether it was Army, Air Force, Navy, or Marines, but to recognize him as a soldier or airman or sailor by merit and given an appropriate decoration and possibly military funeral.
And he essentially was assisting with the evacuation, correct?
Yes, he was a student there, and apparently amidst the chaos and tragedy, kept his wits and held the door for other students so that they could evacuate. And this has, in fact, I fact-checked it myself through both Sun Sentinel and CNN have run the story, but for some reason it just – I don't feel it's gathered enough recognition or attention. We should be
okay.
proud as a community, I think, that this teenager, literally a boy in uniform, did his utmost.
Yes, absolutely.
And anyone hearing the story, they can in fact fact check it through Sun Sentinel or CNN. I believe ABC as well ran something about it. Anyone that's interested in seeing this kid get his recognition. Could certainly contact their local congressman, regardless of their district. I don't think that district matters should be an issue. To see that the story actually gets out there, I mean, and with all of the tragedy that's occurred, those stories are uplifting, that some people found the courage, literally under fire, to look out for others, et cetera.
Right. Well, and I appreciate you bringing that to light. And if you want to send me an email with the details, I'm also going to forward that to my congressional contacts. And let's see if we can get this young man the recognition that he deserves.
I would appreciate that, and I think it's the right thing to do.
I agree. Yep. I agree. Thank you so much for calling in, Fred. And,
oh, you're very welcome.
I look forward to talking with you. I know we're gonna have a chat in the next couple of days, so I look forward to talking with you, and we'll be in touch.
Sounds good. All righty. Thanks
for having
me.
By all means, you know, please stay on the line if you want to, you know, stay tuned into the show.
Okay, thanks. I'll do that. All right.
So, Mike and Doug, I've got this FBI statement that was issued, and it was just issued February 16th, which was my birthday, by the way, just for the record, in case anyone. I'm still celebrating. So the statement reads the following.
Shameless solicitation.
That's right. On January 5th, 2018, a person close to Nicholas Cruz contacted the FBI's public access line, tip line, to report concerns about him. The caller provided information about Cruz's gun ownership, desire to kill people, erratic behavior, and disturbing social media posts, as well as the potential of him conducting a school shooting. Under established protocols, the information provided by the caller should have been assessed as a potential threat to life. The information then should have been forwarded to the FBI Miami field office, where appropriate investigative steps would have been taken. We've determined that these protocols were not followed for the information received. The information was not provided to the Miami field office, and no further investigation was conducted at that time. The FBI Director Christopher Wray said, "We are still investigating the facts. I'm committed to getting to the bottom of what happened in this particular matter, as well as reviewing our processes for responding to information that we receive from the public. It's up to all Americans to be vigilant, and when members of the public contact us with concerns, we must act properly and quickly. We have spoken with victims and families and deeply regret the additional pain this causes all those affected by this horrible tragedy. All of the men and women of the FBI are dedicated to keeping American people safe and are relentlessly committed to improving all that we do and how we do it." Any thoughts on that statement?
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. I will say this. Incompetence is not just a word. Incompetence leads to dead bodies in situations like this. And somebody over there dropped the ball, and you know, they may or may not find out what's going on and hold somebody accountable, but it's not the first time. We saw it, you know, after 9/11, when we found out that they had FBI agents telling their supervisors, doing investigations, that these guys were taking aircraft training, and all they wanted to do was learn how to steer the aircraft. They didn't want to learn how to take off and land. And basically, those agents were snubbed. And you got to look at it this way. If just one person could have intervened then or during the process with this guy Cruz, a knock on the door from an FBI agent or a police detective saying, "We have information that you're making threats to the school." Now, you also got to, you know, look at it this way. They also have to, you know, abide by the law. I'm not too sure with the laws the way they are today that they could actually have confiscated his guns, but somebody could have intervened and spoke to him and talked to him, and maybe just that one little step may have stopped him from doing what he did. Just like if the FBI would have acted on what those field special agents were telling the supervisors, and they were told basically it doesn't mean nothing, let it go. Had one person
right.
just intervened, it could have changed the course of history. So that's my belief on that.
Right, right. And you know, I mean, it's a shame. First of all, I'm sure the special agent in charge of the Miami Field Division is wiping sweat off of his forehead because, you know, clearly the Miami Division did not receive that information. Because had they received it, they would have sent hopefully some special agents out. And if they would have assessed that there was a threat or that he was suffering some mental illness, then they could have had, you know, local law enforcement do a Baker Act and have him taken, you know, for emergency psychiatric evaluation. You know, back in November 2017, the New York Times published an article, What Explains U.S. Mass Shootings? International Comparisons Suggest an Answer. And it's a really interesting perspective. And one of the things, you know, a lot of people are talking about mental health and people should get appropriate mental health, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things they mention in this article is that if mental health made the difference, then data would show that Americans have more mental health problems than do people in other countries with fewer mass shootings. But the mental health care spending rate in the United States, the number of mental health professionals per capita, and the rate of severe mental health disorders are all in line with those of other wealthy countries. So essentially what they're saying in this article is that, you know, mental health is not necessarily a factor here. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think you have a situation where had the FBI gone out there and talked to this young man, the fact that he posted these things, they're not going to arrest him. Maybe they do a Baker Act on him, but what's that give him, 72 hours? How many times has this kid been Baker Acted? 10, 15 times?
Yeah,
I mean, this guy, they basically, BSO was out there every other week if you look at the calls for service logs. You know, and they're Baker Acted.
Correct. I think there was like 20, between 25
sure.
and 29 calls for service.
Sure. Yeah, and the thing is that, you know, from a law enforcement perspective, you go out there and you say, look, we've got these posts, we've got all this, and he says, well, you know, I'm not serious, I'm just crazy, or whatever it is. You know, where's your probable, what are you going to arrest him on? There's no charge other than maybe you Baker Act him, but he's out in 2 or 3 days anyway. I think the problem here is we got a twofold situation. One, the accessibility of anybody to get a high-powered military-use weapon is unacceptable in this society. That's number one. Number two, had we been in England, this guy couldn't have gotten a gun because he couldn't. Maybe he goes in there with a baseball bat. But the point is that this is a guy who obviously has severe mental issues. The guy that was in Las Vegas had some mental issues. You get these people don't take out ads in a newspaper and say, okay, I'm going to do this. Yeah, they give signs. But I'll tell you what my stockbroker always tells me. He goes, hindsight's 20/20. We're looking at it through the rearview mirror so we can see all the flaws in the system. Now, I'm not defending the FBI for dropping the ball because that's unconscionable what happened. They should have investigated.
Right.
They should have sent somebody out there. Who knows? Maybe he doesn't do it. We'll never know the answer to that question. Maybe he just says, the 83rd time these guys have been out here, it's no big deal. Or maybe he says, you know what, that's it, I'm not doing this. I don't think he had the frame of mind to where he could, you know, not that I'm an expert on mental illness, other than I was a cop for 38 years, you know, that you could, you know, I don't think his thought processes are like that. I don't think he recognizes that, oh, they're here. If I do this, there's consequences. He's not looking at the consequences. He's focused on the act.
Right.
Had he not been able to get a firearm, then I think things might have been different. But it's so easy to get a gun. You know, we make it so easy for these people to act out these sort of terrible, horrible fantasies. I mean, look, you're a parent, I'm a parent. I mean, we got kids that age, right? I mean, who in the world, you know, who didn't have to talk their kids off a ledge the next day to get them to go to school?
Yeah, yeah.
And when you took them to school, it looked like an armed camp.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, you know, you can get, and I'll speak for Florida, you can get an AR-15 or an AK-47 at 18, but you can't drink until you're 21.
Well, that's
so where's the logic there?
Yeah, you won't be drunk shooting up the place. You'll just be sober.
But it's
logic.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Doug.
You got to look at it this way, and I'm going to get more hate mail. I get hate mail all the time. I get a lot of hate mail because of the stories I've written, and I don't go along with these conspiracy theories, so I get the hate mail from them. But that's fine. I'm pro Second Amendment. I own guns. I've owned a lot of guns in my life, and but you know, what the problem is nobody wants to say. And I said that in a tweet yesterday, and I got some emails on it. Is this okay? You cannot deny the fact, no matter what side of the gun control debate you're on, that those kids in Florida and those three teachers are dead because they got 223 ammunition in their bodies. That's what killed them. You cannot deny the fact that going to Stephen Paddock in Las Vegas, he wasn't 18. He was a 60-something-year-old man. So, but what was the same thing there? He bought these weapons legally, and people say, well, what's the big deal? And the big deal is this. Now, I got to go out on a limb on this, and, you know, and I've owned assault weapons in my life. I sold them. I don't have any more. But I do own, you know, handguns and other stuff. But, you know, my belief is this, and you got to look at it from this point of view. You know, people say we need it for self-defense. Well, you know, you don't need a assault weapon. I'm going to call it what it is because that's what it is. A 223 and a 308 with that capable of taking 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 100-round magazines is a weapon of mass destruction. Now, people say, I need it to protect my home and my family. Well, actually, you don't. You know, a double-barrel shotgun and a handgun and a lever-action rifle will do the same thing. But you got to look at it this way. Paddock, as far as we know, Stephen Paddock bought those weapons legally at gun shops. And I got to agree with Mike on what he says. Now, I'm not for gun control, okay? I'm not for taking, you know, repealing the Second Amendment. But you cannot deny the fact that 851 people in Las Vegas are wounded and injured and 58 were killed because this guy decided to fire out a window randomly and hit these people with assault weapons that he bought legally in this country, as far as we know. So you got to, that has to be on the table in discussion, no matter what side of the debate you're on, but nobody wants to talk about it. They talk about, yes, mental health is an issue, okay? School security is an issue. Yes, there's things you can do in the schools to harden the schools, but you cannot deny the fact that those kids and those teachers are dead in Florida because they were killed with a high-velocity round from an AR-15 platform type rifle.
And because they were killed with those weapons and that ammunition is because they had such unlimited, easy access to get it, you might as well just sell them like you sell lollipops in a candy store. So if you take that out of the equation, you know, maybe we're making things, because you look at the article that Michael's referencing. He sent it to me this morning. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you look at Japan and England and some of these other places, you don't have these kinds of things because these people don't have access, such easy access to get a hold of a weapon. Look, there's no reason for anybody in this world to have an assault rifle who's not in the military, because they was designed to do a specific thing, kill people. Now, the problem is that you have every one of these senators and every one of these congressmen and probably even your president, these guys are in the NRA's pocket. And you look at them and they, you know, what's their thing? Oh, we can't talk about it. Now's not the time. Well, if now's not the time, when is the time? When nothing's happening? The time is now. Because if we don't do something now, this slaughter is going to continue. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. because you're going to have the copycats. You got a lot of kids, you got a lot of people, including Stephen Paddock and this young man in jail right now, that have serious emotional issues. And you let them manifest those issues with a gun that is an unfeeling, untouching. It's not like a knife. You got to get right up close to somebody and do it. You know what they used to say in the old West when they invented that old Colt 45? It was the great equalizer. Billy the Kid was 5'1", but he was 6 foot tall with that gun, wasn't he?
He sure was.
You know, it was. So, you know, and that's what it is. Is you if you remove them, and I look at it this way, gun control, not have gun control, that's not the argument. We haven't done anything. So we don't know what will work and what won't work. One of our senators from the great and sovereign state of Florida, Marco Rubio, said, well, you know, of course, no, this is a guy who took $3.3 million from the NRA. Well, you know, all these solutions.
Which he's denying.
Sure they're gonna, well, yeah, except for the campaign contributions that he signed.
Yeah. Right.
But the point is that, you know, we got to find something that works. Well, you know, we don't know. We haven't done anything. So we really don't know what's going to work. So let's try something, anything, even if it's wrong. You know, and look, let's face it. The majority of people in this country do not own assault weapons. I certainly don't own one, and I have no reason to have one. You know, and I have handguns because when I retired, they give you your firearm. But, you know, I have it locked up. I started carrying it again, to be honest with you, because of all this that's going on. But if you have such access to these things, people are going to get them, and it's so easy to shoot somebody because it's not a personal thing. You're not next to the guy. Look at Stephen Paddock. This guy was 600 yards away shooting at people. This kid's just, you know, sticking a gun in and just spraying and praying. You know, it's not like you're right next to him. You make it easy for people to get guns, they're going to use them. And they're going to get them, and they're going to manifest these horrible demons inside themselves because we really don't have a mental health system here in Florida. They got rid of it years ago. Because I remember, Michael will remember, we were at BSO at the same time, where we were going to try to build a jail, just a 300-bed hospital jail, just to house our Baker Act patients, because we had no place to put them except in the jail. And these people don't need to be in jail. These people need help, because they didn't do anything other than got born with the problem. And we're punishing them because we have no mental hospitals. They closed them all down here in Florida. They just opened up the floodgates and said, okay, well, you guys deal with it. Well,
right.
this is that unintended consequence of what happens. You've got these people running around. They got no place to put them. Nobody wants to take the responsibility of locking the guy up. The Baker Act itself is, you know, only gives you 3 days anyway. And then, you know what? Under the Baker Act, the doctor starts talking to you and he says, you know what? I want to go. I'm signing myself out. They'll let you go.
Correct. Correct.
You know what it is, Mike? Go on. I don't know if somebody say something, or you want me to say something. Go, okay.
No,
can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, we can hear you fine.
You know,
but remember, we're both named Mike. We're both
okay.
Michael.
Mike the cop and Mike the reverend. Okay, I'll look at it.
Well,
he's
a reverend too.
Oh, okay.
He's a reverend too.
I don't know. What I want to say is this, okay? And I know the hate mail is going to come in and it's going to start pounding up. I don't know what the answer is. All I know is that, like everything else that goes on in this country in my lifetime, we need a leader who's going to make people on all sides, whether they are Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, left, right, to sit down that are in government and come up with logical answers for the problems in this country, not only because of the shootings, but everything that's going on with politics and everything. And we don't have that. Nobody gets along. Now, going back to Las Vegas, okay, I found this very interesting. Now, I'm pro-Second Amendment, and I want people to understand that, okay? I believe everybody has the right to protect themselves because the police can't always be there. We know they come after the fact, and you guys were cops just like me. But, you know, there has to be a discussion. Should somebody be able to walk into a gun store in the United States and pick up a weapon with a 20, 30, or 100-round magazine and be able to walk out and possess that weapon? Now, I would have said 5, 10 years ago, if you asked me that question, yes, because it's protected under the Second Amendment. But with everything that's been going on in this country, and more often than not, it's these assault weapons, AR-15, AR-10 type platform rifles that are used. Now, look at it this way, okay? One of the things, devices that Paddock used to speed up his rate of fire was this thing called the bump stock. Now, after that happened, they couldn't even pass a law in Congress to ban, and the NRA was for it from what I read, to ban bump stocks because they just couldn't do it. Now, a lot of the problems that you have when these gun laws and they try to put them into effect is if you say, I want to ban bump stock or any type of trigger mechanism that would make a semi-automatic assault weapon fire faster than it was manufactured to do. That's very simple to draw up a two-sentence statement and make that a law. But that is not what they do. And that's what people got to understand why nothing ever gets done. Because both sides add in what they want. So the way they word these things, and not only with bump stocks, it's banning certain type of weapons, is it's going to ban any other weapon similarly based on how they word these things. And that's where you get into this debate where somebody says, well, if we do away with assault weapons, or that you want to call them, or you know, weapons that have high capacity magazines, then they're going to start taking other weapons away. Handguns, they'll start limiting how many rounds and magazines you could own. So that's why nothing gets done, because they just can't say it for what it was. If they would have passed a law and everybody would agree that, listen, bump stocks are illegal, it's a device you add on to a rifle and it makes the rifle fire faster than what it was designed to do. That is a simple right. definition that could have passed, but it didn't. And a lot of people understand this also. When they try to pass these laws, it's just not that law that they pass. They add other stuff in there that sometimes has nothing to do with, say, gun control or something else, and that's why nothing gets done. Well, if you're going to give us this, we want to add this as an add-on to this. It has nothing to do with gun control because we want this, and that's why nothing gets done. I got to agree with Mike. It's very disturbing, and I know people are going to say, I'm not anti-gun because I believe people should own guns and you have a right to defend yourself and your property, okay? But when you look at what happened in Florida, forget about everything else past that, you now have parents whose kids went to school carrying backpacks with books and pens in it and were taken out of that school sometime later when the crime scene was finished in a body bag. And those parents had to set the funeral plans for their kids. And what kind of clothes am I going to dress them in his casket? And nobody talks about this because they don't right. want to talk about it. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen because of Florida. Nothing. There is nothing that's going to happen. Nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change on mental health, school safety, school security, you know, looking at the gun control issue. Nothing is going to change. And somewhere down the road in the near future, in the very near future, it's going to be the same thing all over again. That's my prediction on this.
You know, if you read the Second Amendment, it says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Maybe I'm missing something, but where does it say anything there about an AR-15? And maybe if we should all be members of the militia. When that amendment was written back in 1789, people hunted for their food. We didn't have a standing army per se because they abolished it after the Revolutionary War. So they had to have, they wanted people to have weapons so they could form the militia for the provide for the common defense, which is in the first paragraph. You know, now we've got it to the point where, I've got to defend my property. Fine. You know, I get all that, but there's nothing in there. There's no reason anybody needs an assault rifle. And I agree with Doug, though. There's nothing going to happen because the NRA owns these guys, and they're not going to do nothing.
Right. Well, you know, I believe that there is a movement that's starting now right here in Broward County with elected officials, and I hope that they are going to put their money where their mouth is and really fight the fight that they've all started talking about. And I hope they don't politicize this. You know, it's really about keeping everybody safe, you know. And, you know, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter to me about political parties, because I think you got crooks on both sides, and I think you got stand-up people on both sides. You know, I think this is a time, this is a bipartisan issue. I think that people need to come together, whatever their political party, put it aside, and we really need to change legislation. You know, we've really got to do something. I mean, look, New York City has one of the toughest laws on guns and firearms, and you know, still in all, you have shootings in New York, you have armed crimes being committed, but you know, you don't have the mass shootings that we're having throughout the country. So we do have to wind down. Thank you so much, Doug and Mike and Ron, you know, for coming on, and Fred. I do want to mention a couple of things. So I'm going to mute you guys. I do want to mention a couple of things, and that is that a new Family Assistance Center has opened for those impacted by the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas tragedy, and they opened this past Saturday. All right, so there's multiple locations where you can receive assistance. The main facility, the Family Assistance Center, is located at 10559 Trails End, and that's in Parkland, Florida. And pretty much they're open every day from 10 a.m. or 9 to 10 a.m. till about 7 p.m. They have a 24/7 hotline at 754-321-4357. Again, that's 754-321-4357, where you can receive assistance. So, you know, anyone in need, please reach out. There are school counselors there to assist, and you know, you owe it to yourself, particularly for your children as well. There are guidelines that have been put out by the National Association of School Psychologists, and there's guidelines for, you know, talking to children about violence, and it's tips for parents and teachers. And, you know, they talk about reassuring children that they're safe. I mean, that's probably paramount. Many parents, as Mike Somburg mentioned earlier, many parents the day after the shooting had to deal with children that didn't want to go to school. And, you know, under normal circumstances, we say, you know what, they're manipulating. They're trying to get out of going to school. But in this particular instance, it was legitimate. And, you know, as a parent, I didn't want to let my kids go to school. It was a very, very tough decision. This is a topic that we're going to continue to talk about. We're going to continue to push our elected officials. And I'm making that personal commitment. And I know I can count on Doug and Mike Somburg and Ron and Fred and a bunch of other people out there. Malvin, who's tuning in from the other side of Florida. I know I can count on you guys, as well as all of our listeners, to really reach out to your legislators and say, you know what, we've had enough. It is time to make some changes. We're going to flip to a totally different topic. As I mentioned earlier on in the show, that we were going to have Danielle Morgan connect with us. And Danielle is a friend of ours, and I'm going to connect her right now. Danielle, how are you today?
Hey, Reverend Michael. How you doing?
Thank you so much for calling in. Danielle is located in the United Kingdom. We have played her music on the show before, and she has a phenomenal voice, and music being produced by her and John Merrigan, just phenomenal music. And they also have been blessed with a new baby, baby Darcy. And how's baby Darcy doing?
She's doing awesome. She's at the stage now where she's recognizing us, recognizing voices, and she's smiling back and trying to grab out for your hand. So, I know she's brilliant and a complete blessing. We're really very, very lucky.
It's an exciting time, isn't it?
It's amazing. And, you know, they're so small and delicate, and then in a blink of an eye, they're fully grown. So, we're making sure we enjoy her. She's the youngest of six. So very spoiled and loved baby.
That's right. And how old is she now? Is it about 2 months, 3 months?
She's just over the 3 month mark now. So she's nicely going into the 4 month mark, and she's growing healthy and strong. And she's brilliant, brilliant company, full of smiles, and just wants to know that we're there.
Wonderful. And how are things going with the music? Let's talk about that.
We're really, really blessed with the music. The music's gone, you know, far better than we ever anticipated, especially in the States. I don't know what we're doing, but you guys seem to really like it. I'd take an educated guess that it's probably we've gone for the big Chicago and Heart sound, sort of a bit of Fleetwood Mac mix as well. So with the real John Smith, who is based in LA and did 16 years in Nashville as a producer, I think that's probably a sneaky suspicion as to why it's really going down well in America. And, you know, there's lots of UK artists that would give their right arm to be in my position. So we're really very lucky, and we love it. And, you know, we've been watching a lot of Glen Campbell and all of the videos with the big band sound and the orchestration. And to be perfectly honest, the States do it incredibly well. It's just there's a sophistication of the orchestration and the way the music is delivered and the way you sort of the big band style and Frank Sinatra and how that grows. And Elvis, you know, Elvis had it down to a T. So I think that's what makes John and I tick. And we love that. And we don't let a song go out unless it's got the orchestration that we want. So I think that's probably why you guys like it. And we're really, really lucky. Really lucky.
Yes, I love your music, as you know. And I play it all the time in the car. I'll be listening to some of your music after the show when I'm heading down to Miami to officiate a wedding. Because, you know, you guys really put your heart and soul into your music. There's no question about that. I mean, you can really feel it. I think you guys are such a great couple, both, you know, off stage and on stage. Obviously off stage because, you know, you just had your sixth child. So, so you must be doing something right.
We just love our family and we love what we do. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, not everybody likes it. Not everybody likes our viewpoint, and not everybody likes that we put the family first. But that's just tough because we're parents first, and the music will always be a family thing. We've turned down quite a few radio stations in the past because they just don't get, they want to play the music, but they don't get it and they don't get us. And we don't just want to be a number. And we've fought really hard and strong to stay on the right side and ethics and morals. And it's really, it's a very hard path when you're trying to do the right thing and you're trying to do it for the right reasons. And we've lost an awful lot of money by having that viewpoint. But, you know, for us, if we can't wake up of a morning and be with our kids and do the music that we want, the way we want to do it, then you know what? We might as well just go back to our day job.
That's true. That's absolutely true. I love that about you guys, that you're so upfront. You put your cards on the table. And, you know, it's really true. You can't, you know, at the end of the day, you need to be able to put your head on the pillow and not have any regrets and not be embarrassed or ashamed of anything you did. So, you know, that's got to be like the ultimate goal in life, is to live guilt-free.
It, you know, it is. And when you've got kids the ages that we have ranging and they're looking at you the whole time, you just want them to be proud of you. You don't want to do anything that's going to embarrass them or make them feel, you know, not very good. Our mum and dad did X, Y, and Z. And we have a duty. We have a duty of care to our fans, the people we meet, our kids, our family. And we have to be true to ourselves. And, you know, money is not our God, you know, and it never will be. And we will never, ever go off of that path. We know where we're going. We know where we're heading. And unfortunately, if you stop writing checks for people and they're not your supporter anymore, then that's just how it has to be. So it's a hard path, but we've been blessed to meet people like you. And to be perfectly honest, a lot of you guys in the States are behind us, and you're passionate and you're true. And, you know, we will always reflect and give thanks to those that have been on our side. And John and I, you know, there's nothing we wouldn't do for you, and there isn't anything we wouldn't do for some other big DJs in the States that have really got behind us. And there's no agenda. It's just decent people. And there are a lot of decent people out in the world. You just have to find them.
That's right. That's right. And you know, I always appreciate the fact that you're always ready, willing, and able to come on my show, you know, and you've shared your music, you've shared your love, and, you know, I can't tell you, I'm so humbled by that. It means so much to me. You guys have really been phenomenal. So thank you.
Thank you, Reverend Michael. And, you know, you're constantly in our thoughts. And obviously, we were tuned into the show and we heard all of the guys that you had on. And all we want to say from our point of view is that we're thinking of you all. We know it's not far from where, you know, from where you're homegrown. And a lot of your colleagues would have probably been dealing with that. And, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with everyone stateside. And, you know, there are nut jobs everywhere in this world. And unfortunately, we just have to pick up the pieces and stand together as strong as we can.
Absolutely. And important to note that you served with the Metropolitan London Police Force for 7 years. So you speak from experience as well.
I did. And, you know, in all the stuff that I dealt with, you know, there was a lot of bad stuff, but, you know, there's an awful lot of good stuff. And sadly, the good stuff doesn't make the press. It doesn't make, you know, front headlines because, you know, it's not as exciting as, you know, putting people to the floor and, oh, they did this. It's always the bad press. So it's nice to, you know, get on board with all the emergency services and give thanks for the good stuff that everyone does, and everyone just has to deal with the rubbish that there is in this world as best we can, because we're not in control, and we can only do our best to stand together, really, and give each other love.
Absolutely. Amen to that. And when are you going to be setting up a concert in the U.S.?
Do you know, we have been asked this on a daily basis, and we would love to do a concert in the U.S. We're actually thinking about hiring one of their massive, the U.K. call them a motorhome, but they're certainly not motorhomes where you guys are from. They're massive, and just going around and doing a tour. So one of our lead guitarists is actually from the States, and he's given us all his wisdom at the moment of how we can actually make it happen. And we would probably be looking at during the summer vacation period, realistically, when the children are all off on vacation, that we can get over. But we were desperate to come over and gig. We'd gig every night in the States. We just need to make the logistics happen.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to have to give you guys a ring when I decide to come over to the UK, because, you know, I love it over there.
1,000,000%, and we'll take you out. We'll probably have a few gigs on, and we'll take you to the studios, and we'll do London, and we'll do all the fun stuff. Just let us know when you're coming over, and we'll make our way. We're lucky enough that we're about 2 hours away from London on a train, but we're lucky enough to live out into the countryside near to the sea, where we've got a quieter pace of life.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I'm ready to go there right now.
don't get me wrong, we love the city, and we was in there a couple of days ago, and we love it. We do love it, but it's really nice to come away from the craziness,
yes,
where we feel a bit safer, and we can let our guard down a little bit and breathe the country air and be near to the sea. So we don't take that light either. That's something that we really value, and it's our downtime.
Wonderful. So which song should we play today? I was actually thinking about playing two.
Well, our favorite has to be Shy.
Okay.
And I don't know what else you've got, actually. We also like No Trace of You, but you know what? We completely trust you, and you play whatever takes
your
fancy. But
I have Shy, which is one of my favorites. I have No Trace of You, which is also a good one. And I also have On the Path.
On the Path would be nice, actually. On the Path is a stunning song. John Merrigan wrote that for his mum that passed away.
Yes.
And that's a beautiful song. And it's a nice song to reflect to. So I didn't realize you had that one. That's a really nice song.
Yes, it is. And I remember from, I guess you were on our show last year, and I remember the story about John's mom and him writing that song, On the Path. So, okay.
Yeah,
so,
it's a very emotional one.
Yes. So you want me to do one or two?
If you could do two, that would be great. But if you can't,
sure,
then play On the Path. But if you could do two,
oh, no,
then Shy
we'll
on the Path
two
would be amazing.
All right, so we're going to go to Shy, and then from there we're going to go to On the Path. How about that?
Fabulous. That'd be brilliant.
All right. And thank you so much. And my regards to John and to the family.
They're all
are you
going to
listen? All right, wonderful. Wonderful. All right, so we're going to go to Shy. Here we go.
Maybe it's because I'm shy.
All right. What a beautiful song, Shy by Danielle Morgan. And we're fortunate that we have Danielle Morgan and John Merrigan. They're connected with us right now from the UK. And I appreciate them taking time out of their busy schedules, both personal and music-wise, to spend some time with us here on the show and to give our listeners an opportunity. And we're going to talk to John real quickly about On the Path, which is the next song that we'll be listening to. John, how are you?
I'm fine, Reverend Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys tuning in and taking time out of your busy schedules to spend some time with me and the listeners today.
Thank you. Great to be here. And I just also wanted to echo what Danny said earlier. We've been listening to the whole show, and our thoughts and prayers are with everybody affected and everybody who responded to the sad events. And please God, people would be able to pick up the pieces and move forward. And our thoughts and prayers with everybody.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So tell us about On the Path, which you wrote that. Tell us about it.
Well, On the Path, I think I wrote it in about less than an hour. I was reflecting on my mother and the times that I used to walk with her along the coast just outside Dublin, and lots of happy memories, lots of frank exchanges. My mother was a very frank and honest person and taught me a lot and leaves me with a lot of happy memories. And I suppose the song just kind of poured out. I took it to Danielle, and then together we wrote the music. And there's actually about another three verses which have been left on the studio floor, as they say. But they're with us as well. And we've also now moved on with that song in the sense of we do a live version, a really extended live version of that with some wonderful music with the band. And to hear it live makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. And we know when people hear it, it's a very emotional song, which can mean lots of things to everybody. It's personal to me. It's a love song. It reminds people of friendships, lots of different interpretations. And that's what we love about our music. And we'd love to play it in America and to hear. And we're looking forward to playing it at our gigs in London in March and beyond. It's a powerful, powerful song. And glad you like it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I wish you guys the best. And I know we'll be in touch. So we're going to go to On the Path by Danielle Morgan and John Merrigan. And make sure that you connect with them. You can go to DanielleMorganMusic.com. Connect with them on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, and other forms of social media. We're going to go to On the Path, and from there we'll be ending our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. God bless you.